Welcome back, everyone. Ready for another deep
No
dive?
ways.
Awesome. Today we're going deep into the world of mala beads.
Ooh, interesting.
Yeah, and you probably already know that they're used for meditation, but we're going way beyond that today.
Okay.
Like we're going to uncover their history, the spiritual significance across different cultures, and even get into how like modern science is backing up some of their benefits. Yeah, so get this. Our sources for this deep dive, they range from traditional Hindu texts to like cutting-edge neuroscience research.
That's quite a range.
Right? Pretty wild, huh? And we'll even discover how you can use malas for everything, like stress relief, manifesting your goals.
I'm intrigued already.
Oh yeah. And have you ever heard of a mala being given to a yoga student by their master in a special ritual?
I don't think so.
It's a whole thing. We'll get into that too.
It's amazing how these simple beads can hold so much history, symbolism, and like even have practical applications, you know?
Totally. Okay, so before we get into all the cool details, let's just start with the basics.
Yeah, good idea.
What exactly is a mala?
Well, a mala, it's also sometimes called a japa mala or a jap mala.
Okay,
It's
yeah.
basically a loop of beads traditionally used for counting repetitions of mantras, prayers, or affirmations.
Oh, so it's like a spiritual abacus.
You could say that. It really helps you stay focused during meditation.
So definitely more than just a pre-accessory then.
Oh, absolutely. And it's not limited to just one religion or spiritual practice either, you know.
Right.
You'll find malas used in Hinduism, Buddhism, Jainism, Sikhism. It's a really universal tool.
For connecting with yourself.
Exactly.
I'm already intrigued, but you mentioned something earlier about manifesting goals with a mala.
Yeah.
What's the connection there?
Well, that gets into the energetic aspect of mala practice, right?
Okay.
It's believed that the focus and intention that you cultivate during your meditation, it can actually be like stored within the mala itself. Yeah, think of it as like infusing the beads with your aspirations, almost turning the mala into a powerful reminder, like an energetic support system.
For your goals.
Right.
Okay, now you've got me hooked. I need
Chuckles.
to know more about this. But first, let's talk about all the different types of malas out there. Wood, stone, gems. I've even seen seeds.
Yeah, there are so many.
And the stringing material can be anything from natural silk to like modern nylon. How do you even begin to choose?
Well, that's where it gets fun. Each material has its own unique energetic
Oh,
properties.
wow.
So it adds another layer of intention to your mala practice.
Okay, I see.
But before we get into all that, let's dive into a key element of the mala, the number 108.
Okay.
Most traditional malas have 108 beads plus a special guru bead.
108, that's got to be more than just a random number, right?
You're absolutely right. It's steeped in symbolism.
What kind of symbolism?
While some say it represents the 108 energy pathways that connect the heart and soul, others point to the fact that the distance between the earth and the sun is roughly 108 times the sun's diameter.
No way. I never knew that.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And then if you look at the individual digits 1, 0, and 8, they symbolize unity, emptiness, and infinity. It's like a whole cosmic code.
Mind blown.
Chuckles.
So what about those smaller malas I've seen, like with fewer beads?
Yeah, those typically have 54 or 27 Bs, basically factors of 108,
Right, okay.
perfect for a shorter meditation or for wearing on your wrist, like as a reminder.
Throughout the day?
Right. And then, of course, there's the guru bead.
The leader of the pack. What's the story there?
Well, the guru bead, it's often larger or made of a different material,
Yeah, notice that.
and it marks the starting and ending point of your meditation, so you don't count it during your practice.
Oh.
It acts like a gentle stop sign, preventing you from, going in circles, and it brings a sense of completion to your practice.
Like a built-in reset button.
Exactly.
I love how every detail has a purpose.
It's really intense.
Okay, now I gotta ask. Where did this whole mala tradition even begin?
That's where things get really interesting. The exact origin is a bit of a mystery.
Really?
Yeah, but most sources point to ancient India, given its strong presence in Hindu and Buddhist practices.
Makes sense. India has such a rich spiritual history.
Exactly. And while the use of beads for counting, that goes way back to ancient civilizations worldwide.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
The mala as we know it likely emerged in India.
Okay.
We see early depictions in Hindu art and mentions in sacred texts like the Devi Bhagavata Purana.
Wow, so we have like visual and written evidence going back centuries.
Yeah, pretty impressive.
That is impressive. So as Buddhism spread from India, the mala went with it.
Exactly. It made its way to China during the Han Dynasty, and eventually it reached Japan.
Oh, wow.
And what's fascinating is how different schools of Buddhism, like Zen and Tibetan Buddhism, they develop their own unique styles of materials.
So it wasn't a one-size-fits-all kind of thing.
No, not at all.
It evolved.
It evolved and adapted as it traveled the world.
It makes you wonder how many other things are like that. Okay, I'm ready to get practical here.
Okay.
How do you actually use Yamala? Is it just for meditating?
Well, the most common use is for meditation, but it's not the only way to tap into the power of Yamala, you know?
Right.
Think of it as a mindful dance between your fingers and your breath. So you hold the mala in your dominant hand between your thumb and middle finger with that guru bead marking your starting point.
Mm. This step-by-step approach is really helpful. It makes it seem approachable, even for a beginner.
That's the goal.
But how do I choose the right mala? There are so many materials.
That's a great question, and that's where we'll pick up next time.
All right, can't wait. Okay, so we've talked about what a mala is. We talked about the history.
I found a lot of ground.
Yeah, for sure. But now I'm really curious about all those different materials.
Oh.
Because it's not just like a fashion choice, right?
Definitely not. Choosing a mala is really about finding materials that resonate with your intentions. It's like creating this personalized energy toolkit.
I love that. So where do we even begin?
Well, let's start with gemstone malas. Each gemstone, it has its own unique vibration.
Oh, wow.
And that influences your energy and your practice.
Okay.
And we talked a bit about amethyst, rock crystal, and rose quartz last time.
Right. Those were for intuition, clarity, and opening the heart, if I remember correctly.
That's exactly right. Good memory.
What other gemstones are out there? Like, what makes them so special?
Well, if you're someone who tends to feel overwhelmed or anxious a lot, you might want to consider a shundite mala.
Shundite?
Yeah, it's known for its protective qualities, almost like a spiritual shield against negativity.
Oh, interesting. So it's not just about meditation then. It's like it can help with daily life challenges too.
Exactly. And then if you're working on your communication, maybe finding your voice, chalcedony or larimar could be helpful.
Okay.
They're thought to promote openness and clear expression.
I never thought of it that way. It's like choosing a mala to, like, support you through specific situations.
Precisely. Mm-hmm. And we can even connect these gemstones to the concept of chakras.
Oh, right. Chakras. Remind me about those.
Sure. So think of chakras as these energy centers in your body. And each chakra is associated with certain emotions, behaviors, even physical areas.
Okay. So a mala can help balance these energy centers.
Yeah. That's the idea behind chakra malas.
Okay.
For instance, amethyst, which we talked about, it's associated with the crown chakra. So it enhances intuition and helps you connect with your higher wisdom.
Hmm. Interesting. So what about wooden malas? Where do they fit in?
Wooden malas, they offer a very earthy and grounding energy.
I could see that.
Sandalwood is a really popular one.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's known for its balancing properties. And of course, it's got that calming scent. Imagine that aroma while you're meditating.
Oh, that sounds incredible. I can almost smell it now. What other wooden options are there?
Well, rosewood is another favorite, and it's often paired with colorful gemstones, so you get that grounding energy of the wood with the specific properties of the stones.
It's like a little party for your senses and your energy field.
Exactly. And then, of course, you've got the plant seed malas. Those have their own unique vibe.
Oh, for sure. Tell me about those.
Well, lotus seeds are incredibly beautiful. They've got these natural speckles, and they symbolize purity and spiritual awakening.
Mm.
Rudraksha seeds, which are highly revered in Hinduism, have spiritual and protective properties.
Okay.
And then there's the Bodhi seed mala. This one holds a really deep significance in Buddhism because it's said that Buddha reached enlightenment under a Bodhi tree.
That's powerful.
Yeah.
Choosing a mala feels so much more meaningful now that I understand the symbolism, like behind each material.
It has a whole other dimension, doesn't it?
Yeah, it totally does. Okay. Let's say I've found the perfect mala. What are the essential things I need to know to take care of it?
Well, your mala is more than just an accessory, right?
Yeah.
It's a sacred tool.
So caring for it properly is important.
Exactly. Regular cleansing is key.
What do you mean by cleansing?
So you want to clear away any stagnant energy. Smudging with sage or sandalwood is a great way to do this.
So I should add sage to my shopping list, along with my mala.
Great idea. And then when you're not using your mala, you want to store it in a pouch or just a dedicated space. Keep it off the ground and away from any negativity.
Mm. Treat it with respect.
Exactly, like you would any other sacred object. And you mentioned water earlier. No showering or swimming with the mala.
Okay,
right. Water can weaken the thread and potentially damage the beads, so it's best to take it off before any water activities.
Got it. All these care tips are really helpful. Now I've been wondering, is wearing a mala just for, you know, people who meditate regularly?
That's a great question. And the answer is a resounding yes.
Really?
Yeah.
That's good to know. I've always been drawn to malas, but wasn't sure if I was, like, meditator enough.
You don't have to be a seasoned meditator to benefit from the energy of a mala. Think of it as a reminder to just be present, to connect with your intentions throughout the day.
It's like a little pocket of tranquility you can carry with you.
Exactly. And it can also be a powerful tool for intention setting. You choose a specific intention or affirmation.
Okay.
And then you infuse it into your mala and carry that energy with you.
So it's like a personalized affirmation generator.
You could say that.
I love that. What kind of affirmations, though?
Well, you choose a phrase or a word that really resonates with you, something like peace, courage, or abundance. And you can just repeat it to yourself as you hold each bead.
That's a great way to bring more mindfulness into my daily routine.
Right.
Okay, but I've also heard that you're not supposed to share your mala with others.
Yeah, that's a common belief.
Is there truth to that?
There is. Your mala becomes infused with your energy and intentions, right? So it creates this unique energetic bond. Sharing it could disrupt that connection, almost like sharing a toothbrush.
That makes sense. It's like personal and sacred.
Exactly.
But while we're talking about personal practices, I'm curious about the, like, modern uses of malas. Are people using them for things beyond traditional meditation?
Absolutely. Malas are popping up everywhere, and people are finding really creative ways to incorporate them into their lives.
Like what?
Well, we're seeing them in yoga studios, mindfulness workshops, even therapy sessions.
Oh, wow. Okay, now you've got me really intrigued. Tell me more.
Well, some people are using malas for counting breaths throughout the day.
Okay.
It's a really simple but powerful way to just bring awareness to your breath and cultivate a sense of calm.
So like a mini meditation.
Exactly. Others use malas for walking meditations. So with each step, you move a bead and repeat your chosen mantra or affirmation.
That sounds so peaceful.
Yeah.
What other cool ways are people using them these days? We've covered so much about malas, from like their ancient roots to how people are using them today.
It's fascinating how relevant they still are.
Totally. Yeah. But I'm curious, from all your research, what surprised you the most about them?
You know, what really struck me was how science is now starting to validate what these ancient traditions have known for centuries.
Okay.
That using a mala can have a really profound impact on our well-being.
You know, I love when science backs up ancient wisdom. Tell me more about these findings.
Well, we've talked about how the repetitive action of moving the beads can calm the nervous system.
Right.
And this is because it stimulates the parasympathetic nervous system, the one that's responsible for relaxation and stress reduction.
So it's not just like a feeling. There's actually a physiological response happening in your body.
Exactly.
Wow.
And studies on mantra meditation, which is often done with a mala, they've shown improvements in focus, attention, and mindfulness.
Okay.
Researchers are even using brain imaging now to show how mantra meditation can change activity patterns in the brain.
So we're literally rewiring our brains for the better with each bead we pass.
That's the idea.
It's amazing to think that something so simple can have such a powerful impact.
It really is, and it goes beyond just relaxation and focus, too.
Oh.
Some therapists are now using malas in their practice.
Really?
Yeah, particularly with patients dealing with anxiety or trauma.
I'm really interested in that. How do malas help in a therapeutic setting?
Well, the tactile experience of holding and moving the beads, combined with focused breathing and intention, it can really help people regulate their emotions and feel more grounded.
It's like having a physical anchor to hold on to.
Exactly.
When things feel overwhelming.
Yeah, it can be really helpful for a lot of people.
Mm.
And even beyond therapy, there's so many creative ways that people are using malas these days.
Okay.
Some use them to count repetitions during workouts, bring mindfulness to their fitness routine.
Oh, interesting.
Others create malas with specific intentions in mind, like healing, abundance, self-love.
It's like each mala becomes this unique and personal tool for growth.
I think that's a beautiful way to put it.
I'm feeling so inspired to get my own mala and start exploring.
You should.
This deep dive has been such an eye-opener for me. I've learned so much about the history, the symbolism, and all the different ways to use malas. But before we wrap up, what's the one thing you want to leave our listeners with?
I'd like to turn that question back to you, dear listener. Now that you've had a chance to explore the world of mala beads, what intention would you infuse into your own mala? What goals, aspirations, or qualities would you like to cultivate? Let the mala be your guide, your reminder, and your source of support as you move forward.
What a beautiful thought. It's not just about the beads themselves.
Yeah.
It's about the intention we bring to the practice.
Yeah, exactly.
This has been such a fascinating deep dive. Thank you so much for sharing your expertise with us.
It's been my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And to our amazing listeners, thank you for joining us on this journey. Keep exploring, keep learning, and keep shining your light. We'll be back next week with another deep dive into a topic we know you'll love.